somebody will come to order, and today we're meeting as a subcommittee until other members arrive. Today is a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5053, the Oregon Department of Transportation. Jeff Crimes, Oregon Progress Board, is going to discuss some performance measures with us. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jeffrey Trines. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Progress Board. I was here a few weeks ago and you asked me to come back to speak about the Oregon Department of Transportation's performance measurement system. And so what I'd like to do today is to do three things really in my time. One is to actually look at what makes up an effective performance measurement system, because if you don't have something to compare against, it's very hard to comment on how any agency handles that. Then I will recommend a process for improving legislative involvement for all agencies, not just the Oregon Department of Transportation, and that was one of my final recommendations that I made at the last time I was in front of you. And then lastly, I will, in light of that, review the Oregon Department of Transportation's existing performance management system. So if that works for you, Mr. Chair, I'll start. In terms of a performance system that works, you need a set of elements that starts with having agencies performance measurement linked to societal outcomes. Ideally, it's the benchmarks, but if it's not the benchmarks, then it's some other outcome the Oregonians actually care about. What are they doing that matters to Oregonians? Number two is to have quality measures. That is to say, they need to be meaningful. We need to know what they're about. They need to be reliable. They need to have a target. We need to know what it is we're trying to achieve. And they need to show a balance. And what I mean by that is, you need some of these high-level outcomes, but you also need administrative measures to see how well the agency is being managed. And then you need another set of measures which looks at how well the stakeholders for that agency and the public are viewing their work. So it's the three types of measures that allow us to have the balance. You need to have a set of strategies. How are you going to achieve those targets that you've laid out for yourself? And then lastly, you got to make sure the data is actually being used. You can have the greatest performance measurements in the world, but if they're not being used for management, they're not very helpful. I have left for you all a copy of these slides, which you should find at your space. When I was last here, I made four recommendations that reflect improved and increased legislative involvement in reporting performance management. One is to require a consistent reporting format so you know what you're looking at when you receive these reports. Number two is to require agencies to show specifically how they link in with benchmarks or these other high-level outcomes. Number three is to require agencies to identify performance targets, what it is they're trying to achieve. And lastly, require legislative review of those measures so the legislature knows what agencies are reporting on, and then require that those measures be consistently reported on over time. So you're seeing the measures not only one time.
Excuse me, Jeff. Under you.
Excuse me. Jeff, I don't see the full
requirements
on
Senator, turn the page.
I turn the page.
I right down here at the left hand.
No, we're not, Senator. If I could explain this to you, you're Executive Vice Senator Yee. I added this slide at the last minute to give you an overview before I went into each recommendation.
Oh, okay.
So it's not there.
Okay, sorry
for interrupting. No, it's actually, I ought to have included it, but when I was reviewing it right before the hearing, it looked like I better add that so
okay.
I could give you an overview.
I want to make sure I see your recommendation.
Step
four is not here.
This slide that you're looking at comes at the end of this part, but it's not at the In other words, it's not...
Yeah, but on page 3,
right.
It's out of order.
He's presenting it.
Oh. It's out of order, Mr. Chair.
Okay, all right.
I hope I'm not out of order, but it's out of order.
That's fine, thanks.
We'll take a vote on that.
So I'd like to just look at these one at a time for just a moment. Require this consistent reporting format, not just for ODOT, but for all agencies. What that would look like for the Oregon Department of Transportation, in my view, is the following. We would have what I call a balanced scorecard with those three kinds of measures, the results measures, the management measures, and then the satisfaction measures, if you will. So you have a set over here, which I call transportation results, and we'll look at all of them in a minute. Then we would have another set, which are the management results. How well is the agency actually being managed? And lastly, we would have this other set of measures, which is how the customers view the work of the agency. So that's the way you'd see these measures regularly. You'd expect to see them that way. They need to be organized that way. And you'd know what you were looking at from agency to agency in terms of what they're reporting to you. Require agencies to show specifically how they link in with these higher-level outcomes. The last time I was here, I explained to you the problem that agencies have right now with they have performance measures, which often measure their various workloads, and they have a very hard time linking that in with benchmarks, which are these very high-level outcomes. We've been working with agencies to figure out how to make those links. A very good example that the Oregon Department of Transportation has is the work that they've been doing on wild salmon and steelhead with other state agencies. What they've been able to do is using that high-level outcome, recovering wild salmon, is they've gone and they've inventoried all of the culverts that they're responsible for in the Coast Range, and they have prioritized them for each watershed. So here you can see, for instance, for the Nehalem, these are the number of high-priority culverts that the state manages that need to be modified. These are the medium and then these are the low. And then what they've done is that they've set performance targets in this area where they show for each year starting in 1997 how many of these high priority culverts will be modified in each year. So you have the opportunity then to see what the plan is, to see what the target is, and then to come back and expect them to come back once they have identified this and you've agreed that it's a priority and report to you regularly about whether they're achieving these outcomes or not. So that's my recommendation about what the system might look like that Ways and Means could then use to get a better handle on the way agencies are achieving the results that we'd like to see them achieve.
Representative Butler.
I appreciate, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the explanation of the culvert issue of state culvert issues. But you also have, Jeff, my understanding is that you have a list of state historic and scenic bridges that could easily be replaced at this particular point when they collapse and are dilapidated with culverts. Will we have to replace those with other expensive bridges so that we don't disrupt the salmon issue? And is that part of what you're talking about when you talk about the performance system relative to salmon recovery?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I'm not an expert on ODOT, so I'm afraid I can't answer that specific question, but I would say that those are the kinds of things that ought to come up in a performance management reporting system. You should know in advance whether that is part of the priorities and then what that's going to look like.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, just follow up. And my concern is that many of these ancient dilapidated bridges could now be replaced with some very excellent culvert systems at a fraction of the cost when the bridge needs replacement, as opposed to going in and trying to maintain bridges that are on the state historic and scenic bridge list. And I guess I didn't know anything about the state historic and scenic bridge list until somebody brought it to our attention in Eastern Oregon, and we renamed the entire list. We renamed it the state historic and scenic bridge and culvert list because we already replaced a half a dozen of those with culverts because culverts were the much more logical way to go, and the bridges could collapse during various storms and so forth, and And for safety purposes, we've replaced them already. So I guess there's some issues of efficiency that that there ought to be things that would be could be easily replaced with culverts. We need to factor that into the overall cost, I guess, as we talk about the replacement of culverts and as it relates to bridges as well, recognizing we're going to have some very expensive when we're trying to maintain both salmon runs and ancient bridges, and I'm not talking about some of those very tourist attraction type bridges, and because they were built before 1910, they're historic and they have some tremendous value. But I just am concerned that we're trying to preserve too many things, and we'll give up. There's a give and take, and then we'll give up salmon at some point in exchange for trying to maintain a bridge, or we'll lose the bridge, and that typically is what happens: is that we'll lose the bridge, and then at that point, then we can replace them with good, strong culverts.
Mm-hmm.
At that point.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd like to just very quickly, if I might, run through those transportation result indicators that I was calling outcomes a minute ago. And that's these ones over here on this the left-hand side of the scorecard. The way this, if I could call it navigation, works, as you can see, these are the transportation results and the management results up here, and then I have a circle around the area that we're looking at. So the four things in my mind that the Oregon Department of Transportation is about is moving people and goods, doing it safely, protecting the investments that we have in our transportation infrastructure, and then being involved in quality development in the future. So those are the four areas that I would suggest we would organize the results around. If you look at moving people and goods, there are two key areas that we would look at. And each of these slides will show you the kinds of things that we already know about this area. And it's really to give you an overview of the kinds of things you might be looking at if agencies were required to report in this manner now, which they're not. So we look first at the urban rush hour problem. We have a trend line, we have the data points, and then we show whether it's a target that the Progress Board has adopted in cooperation with ODOT, or whether it's one that ODOT has itself. So what I'd like to do today is just to give you an overview of what might be in there rather than actually wrestling with the issues, because I just won't have time to do that because there are a number of issues that this raises. So the other thing we'd look at in the move people area, the other high-level thing, is non-single occupancy vehicle commute times. Now, there are other measures. I don't have anything in here, for instance, that relates to freight. You'd probably want to add maybe a specific measure that relates to that issue. But you have a series in each of these areas. We move on to safety. We now measure highway fatalities. The department has a target that they want to achieve for the year 2000. They have another one that they want to achieve for the year 2010. I might add this, that if you look at the trend line, it should actually stop here because we'd have to move this all the way out to about here to get 2010 in the trend line lined up. But we have in a number of the parts of ODOT, we've already got this system in place. I'm not saying that these are measures that are not urging. What I'm urging is for the legislature's viewpoint to have it organized this way makes it much more useful as an oversight function for the department. So the other thing they have for safety is injuries that occur when there are highway accidents. In looking at the infrastructure, we currently see that we have a rating for pavement statewide. We also have it for each type of highway, and I've handed out, which was at the request of Senator Dukes the last time I was here, the yellow sheet that you have, which is regional ratings for each of ODOT's regions. So you can look there and see how pavement rating varies by region. And if you look right behind that, you've got the spreadsheet that actually shows the data. So that's there are a variety of ways to cut the data. What I'm looking at here is a high-level overview. We also know the state that the state that Oregon's bridges are in. So we have that rating, which I would also include. In terms of quality development, we would look at annual vehicle miles traveled, which we also track now. We'd look at, as I said, at wild salmon steelhead, which is a quality development issue. We might also look at air, which is not in here. And lastly, we would track something that has to do with the commute times in our metropolitan areas.
Yeah, let me ask you, what are you doing with all these studies? Is ODOT receiving presentations on this, or is this something you're collecting and not dispersing back out to the affected people? On the salmon recovery and all these things, who are we supposed to say has had privy to this information?
Mr. Chair, I've been working very closely with the department during this exercise in response to your request, and they've seen these slides. They're very familiar with the benchmark information, and I work with agencies all the time on all of this data, so they're very well aware of it.
Last question: this legislature changed some of the budgeting for ODOT and told them how we expected a budgeting concept to come back in this session. Representative Watts in the last session had a lot to do with that. Now, this session, we're talking about zero-based budgeting, the same thing, and saying, well, bring it into us, and then we'll pick it apart point by point. How do you reconcile that in your earlier statement here, give legislative information, and if you keep changing the rules of the game on budgeting, how do you get to the source of the information you need?
Well, my response this year would be that whatever the budgeting process you're doing, whether it's zero-based or whether it's current service level, an agency still has to say what the results are that they're going to achieve as a result of how they're going to spend those funds. So I would argue that you could put together a reporting system on results that would still stand up regardless of the way you chose to budget the funds. It would have to be part of that, and depending upon how you looked at your starting point, you might fill all your results out and start over again, which would be a problem, but you would end up with still a results report which would look like this, which would be organized around the actual transportation measures you're achieving, the management measures you're achieving, and then the customer satisfaction.
Senator Yee.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go back on page 4 in the bottom right-hand corner. You said injuries and crashes.
Uh-huh.
In 1998, it was 103. In year 2000, your ODOT target is 110. So why is your target higher than the number of injuries in 98? I would imagine your target should be lower.
Madam Chair, the person who heads up safety is here, and it's quite possible that I might have even made a mistake, but that's what the trend line shows. I mean, if you look at the trend line, we would be there if you averaged out the highs and lows. If you'll notice that number goes up and down some.
Yeah, but that's your target. I thought you should aim at something lower question rather than aim at a higher question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee,
is it
110
or 118?
If I had my glasses, I could read it for you, but I believe it says 110. Mm-hmm. So it's right about where the trend is slightly heading down, and that's that would be lower on average than it has been since 1993. It's a lower average number. The person who's head of safety will be up this morning, I could either ask him to come up now or you could ask him at the time, Senator.
Oh, are you the chief? No. I would like to hear a response if that's the committee's wishes.
Well,
why do
they I think he's just trying to give us ways of thinking about these issues. Maybe when we get into safety, that would be a appropriate time to bring that up. That's, unless you really, really, really got to get an answer.
Well, I just want to ask that question. If it's answered later, that's fine.
Yeah.
Why would the target be higher than what we have already achieved?
I am sure that he will address that when he comes up, Senator.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I want to move on to the next part of this scorecard, the balanced scorecard that I spoke about earlier, which would be the management result indicators. What is it that we're looking for in terms of management? We've got three in this area that I'm recommending. One is something that we call dollars on the road, but we don't quite know what that is. So right now what the department uses is the department's spending on administration. How much of the budget is actually spent for administrative functions? They do have a target in that area, and they are, as I understand it, working towards having a more specific measure that really allows you to get to what the legislature wants in this area. Projects on time. Right now, what the department reports is projects that go out on time to bid. They do not report on projects completed on time. They are working on that as a future indicator, and that will be something, as I understand it, that they will have available. And then private contracting. I know there's a lot of interest within the legislature on how much of the department's funds are actually contracted out as opposed to what's spent in-house. The measure that they use right now is they look at all expenditures that are made on both services as well as things, and they look at what percentage of that is purchased from private companies. In my opinion, this is a measure that the department might improve, and they know they need to improve this, but they are tracking this number right now.
Yes, if I could ask you to maybe briefly shorten it up.
Okay, I'll see you up, Senator.
The Senate goes in at 10.
Okay.
And so we have to leave. Lee Hazelwood, were you going to testify in the public hearing? That's tomorrow. That's tomorrow morning, so I'll save you in case you don't want to sit all morning and hear this testimony. You're certainly welcome to leave.
I'm very happy. There is one question I would have of Jeff.
That sounds like a teacher. Jeff, go ahead.
If I could just very quickly, there was an issue that Senator Cusub raised at the last meeting, which is that when you look at public opinion about highway maintenance, we see that it has fallen between 1995 and 1999. The Department of Transportation also measures that, not asking about all highways, but asking about ODOT highways, and they show a constant about 83% to 84% approval rating. So their numbers show that number hasn't fallen, and I can't exactly reconcile that except one of the questions asked only about ODOT, and the other one asked about all roads and all state and local maintenance efforts. I'm going to skip over these other ones, Senator, to get to my specific observations, but we need a set of service level measures and a set of satisfaction measures in terms of how Oregonians and stakeholders view how well the agency's operating. I started out by laying out four areas which are part of an effective performance system. What I'd like to do now is to share with you an overview of what I've learned from spending a good deal of time with the department looking at all their measures. I have them all in here in this notebook. And what I found, if you hold it up against those criteria, is the following. Linking to high-level outcomes. The department has a series of high-level outcomes that they link into. Like most agencies, and I want to really stress this, like most agencies in state government, the clear links between agency activities and these higher level outcomes could be stronger. It's very hard to make those links, and like a lot of other agencies, there's significant room for improvement there. In terms of quality measures, getting the balance between those results and those management measures and the satisfaction, the types of measures vary a lot depending upon which part of the agency you're looking at. And my recommendation would be that you need to have a balance across the agency. Some of the measures, as I have commented on in my overview, could be improved. There's room for improvement everywhere, and I'd be happy to work with the department if they wanted my help in that. And there could be stronger coordination between the different parts of the agency. So agencies are looking at the same overriding measures and measuring their progress towards those outcomes. In terms of strategies, I would say that there's room for improvement in terms of priority setting. Some divisions, when you look at their strategies, they might list 20 strategies, and it's not clear which of those is high priority and which of those are the ones that they like to get to. So that's an area that I would say, like in other agencies, there's room for improvement in both identifying those priorities and linking them. And then how do you know when a strategy is actually working? How do you evaluate your success? Where we're spending as much money as we're spending in a large agency like the Oregon Department of Transportation, we ought to have a way of knowing what's working. And that's a hard answer, but it's one that I think we need to keep working on. And then in terms of using the data, at their quarterly management meeting, the Department of Transportation actually looks at a set of these measures. I think that this scorecard approach for both them and you would make the data more useful over time. That's the end of my comments, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if there's time, Senator, or...
Thank you very much. Are there any questions by committee members? Sir, thank you, Jeff, for your presentation.
You're welcome.
This morning we're going to move to Transportation Safety Division Budget Overview. And Troy Costales and Linda Gilbert, did you want to come back up, please?
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costales. I'm the manager of the Transportation Safety Division of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Transportation Safety Division is a recent addition to the Department of Transportation in 1991. It was the Oregon Traffic Safety Commission was moved into the department as the Transportation Safety Division. Our role, as stated in statute, is to work with many partners to organize, plan, and conduct a statewide transportation safety program. We are the state representative for the federal agency, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and the funds that are passed through that administration come to the safety division. We are also part of the overall safety program in this state, and we work in cooperation with those involved in education, enforcement, and engineering. On the first page of your handout, recognizes that the Transportation Safety Division is broken up into two main programs, statewide operations and field programs. This distinction was created by legislative approval in order to identify those funds that Transportation Safety handles that are passed through and are used by other government agencies or grant contracts, other services pertaining to transportation safety. Our customers are all citizens and visitors to the state in regards to the fact that we deal with programs such as impaired driving, occupant protection, speed, police traffic services, and the list goes on. The National Administration has a list of 20 program areas that they've identified as high priority And when we put together our annual work plan, we address programs within all 20 of those areas, plus others that are unique to the state of Oregon. Our average grant size at this time is less than $50,000, and in part because that is, there's a high interest in what we call mini grants to local communities of the size of $4,000 to $5,000, where cities or counties are asking for things such as a radar reader board that they can put in school zones that indicate what the speed sign, the speed is and what you're going, or in some cases being able to get radar guns for speed for their law enforcement, or video cameras that they can use for taping of impaired driving arrests and to be able to use in court. In other cases, it's things as simple as a computer for their local traffic safety committee that they can use when working with the public works department. So from the citizen point of view, they're able to work with the city government or the county government in identifying high crash locations in their location areas.
Senator, do you have that?
Does the camera, the video camera, or the one that takes a picture, either while you're driving, when you're speeding, or one that's on a stop light also fall in this category?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Akita, I believe you're referring to the red light running or the photo radar equipment. At this time, our funds are not used to purchase those equipment that the cities can use in that program. And there are bills currently in front of the legislature for both of those programs.
Does the National Highway Safety Division, or Transportation Division, help any of that funding? Is money available for that or not?
In some states where they were innovative in doing these approaches, there were innovative grants placed out there for those states. I do not believe that the national level of those programs still exists. There are quite a few states that have the program now.
Does the Traffic Safety Commission still exist?
Mr. Chairman, the Transportation Safety Commission does exist. Chairman Dr. Tung was here last week,
right,
in the other hearing room.
And so you're the kind of executive officer for that commission?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. I remember back years ago when Gil Bellamy ran this, and this whole section of the department, I've always wanted to abolish.
Because all they do is collect federal funds,
feed on the bureaucracy at the 12th, and pass through a reduced amount to cities and counties. And you have to look at their FTE in this department. Page two, of the presentation, there's one FTE for the director, there's five FTE for managers, program coordinators 11, and region coordinators 2. This is one of the most bloated state agencies per capita that it generates when all these contributions that they get to cities and counties are all under $50,000. And so look at the dollar value that's being given to the communities versus the FTE that is given there. And it's nothing against you, but this is one thing that needs to go to Jimmy Craig and lose a few pounds.
Nothing against him, but probably he should prepare his resume.
I know. It's just something I feel very strongly about. Right? When you talk about a $50,000 grant,
yeah,
and having that kind of bureaucracy to administer it, I notice here it says statewide operations, 15% of expenditures. We have some statewide operations that are getting by on as little as 5% operations. And why do we need 15% to administer a program that doesn't give any more than $50,000? It just doesn't cut it with me. And I'm just being honest, and so I want you to be prepared when we go into work session on this, because when you look at all these FTE for what you're doing, it just doesn't justify itself.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, in regards to the organization chart, there are only two management staff within the division. at this time. As far as program coordinators, we have specific technical program coordinators that represent areas I mentioned before, impaired driving, youth, and speed. And we spend a tremendous amount of time researching information and responding to questions that citizens or local government have in regards to appropriate application of the law or programs that are available that they may be able to use in their location because they've had a tragic event such as a car full of teens that's killed, and they want to know what they can do with their middle school or their high school in order to elevate highway safety within their program area. We administer a motorcycle safety program that is mandated by law across the state, where we have classes available within 50 miles of their location within 90 days of when the requester has asked for the class. We provide training and technical expertise to many public works agencies where the engineer that they have hired does not actually have a transportation or traffic engineer background for things such as when they redo a county road or a city street, how do they deal with mailboxes when they go to replace them? What type of materials are they supposed to use? How far are they supposed to be offset from the highway? We deal with hundreds of phone calls. In most cases, we can handle them within our own staff and answer the questions, or we refer them to other technical experts in other agencies or other parts of the department. If I can continue to page four in regards to outcomes. Senator Yee had a question in regards to the last presentation on establishment of a goal that appears to be higher than the last year's figure. On the injuries and crashes, the goal that we established for the year 2000 was created in 1995. We're working towards 1996, 97, and 98 data is newer, new data than when we originally established the year 2000 goal. Within transportation safety, we have a guiding document, the Safety Action Plan, which was done in 1995, that established year 2000 and year 2010 goals in all the subject areas that we deal with. On an annual basis, transportation safety identifies what we have done in each of those specific categories and outline the list of projects that are being done throughout the state, which there are over 250 in any given year towards those specific subject areas. And in relationship to the year 2000 goal for injuries and fatal crashes, we will leave that goal there because that's what we're heading towards. If we can exceed that, then that is the best thing we can do. We will have established a 2005 goal during next year. We've set our five-year goals trying to achieve the overall safety performance measures.
Senator Yee.
So why do you want to set goals using four-year or five-year-old data? I mean, what's the use of setting goals when you already achieved it in 98? I mean, is this kind of a wasted effort when you already achieved the goal and you want to set a goal with a higher number of injuries?
Sure, Cindy. We use at least 5 years of data, the most current we have, in order to set a goal that is 5 years in front of us.
We update it every year with the latest data?
Mr. Affinity, that is correct. We set 1 year ahead of us, the goal in front of us for 1 year, we reestablish every year. But the long-term goal, we do not republish or reestablish, because that will then become confusing to those working towards the long-range goal, because it would keep moving. As we start to approach the year 2000, we will establish a 2005 goal and continue to update on an annual basis what we are trying to achieve 1 year from now.
I don't understand why you want to waste time and energy setting goals that are already achieved, and it sounds kind of crazy to set a goal at 110 injury when you already achieved it in 98.
I would like to take congratulations to those involved in transportation safety in the state that they have achieved a number below the year 2000 goal during 1998.
So that goes to show we should set a goal lower than 103 because we already achieved it in 98. Don't you want to set a goal to improve rather than set a goal to disimprove?
Mr. Senator, we will establish goals that will be lower based on the fact that we have had most recent years have dropped. So for this publication, we already established our year, our 2000 goal, and just 2 weeks ago, we got our 1998 figures, and it was we're not going to reestablish the year 2000 within the last 2 weeks.
So, in other words, Mr. Chair, congratulations are actually in order,
right.
And you probably will go back to the drawing board and make a goal that is lower, so that it does. This actually shows you've done a good job, and we should be telling you you really have done a good job. Thank you, and we'll expect to see it at that point or below.
Okay, then, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions relating to safety belt use. In your list of accomplishments for 97-99, you say the safety belt use is the fourth highest in the nation. What is that percentage-wise use in the state? Do you have that number?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carr, Oregon, based on the national model survey, so we can compare state to state, Oregon is listed as having an 83% safety belt use rate. The national average is around 60%. In Oregon, every percentage point that we can achieve higher in safety belt use means 3 to 5 fewer fatalities on the road and 200 fewer injuries.
Just want to follow up with that.
Yeah.
What specifically does the Transportation Safety Division do to encourage safety
building? Chairman, let's start. Within the Architect Protection Program, there are three distinct age groups that we address, those that are in child safety seats. And in that program, we fund child safety seat clinics that are around the state where parents or guardians and a general parent can bring in their vehicle with the child safety seat in the vehicle with their certified technicians that will look at how that seat is installed in the car, whether it's correctly in the car, and whether the young child is appropriately belted into the seat.
That grant funds the local agencies, or is the department itself actually running the program?
Sharon, that is grant funds that are made available. We also, for that age group, try and have public information and technical information that's made available on seats that have been recalled, seats that are have passed crash tests. And one of the programs that we fund has been able to negotiate an agreement with one of the seat manufacturers for those in low-income situations where they can get the seats at cost through Fred Meyer's, which are located throughout the state. For the second age group, which is the teens, in that particular case, we work with high school and with local emergency medical technicians, nurses, and police in order to get the two audiences to communicate about the importance of wearing belts. This is one of the lowest belt use rate categories of all citizens in the state of Oregon. And the third category is adults and their use of safety belts. We have a statewide survey that tracks belt use by location around the state and by age group, and we address our public information campaigns towards those locations of the state or those age groups that show resistance of wearing belts. And we fund traffic patrol throughout the state through the Sheriff's Association and the Chief Association in doing specific blitzes where we advertise ahead of time in a newspaper or in radio in regards to we'll be doing funding blitzes around the state, particularly around holiday times, and fund enforcement during that time in order to remind those that aren't ready to be buckled up.
If I can follow up.
Yes,
Chair, just with a comment. I had the opportunity to sit through a presentation done by the trauma nurses the hospital at the end of the bridge in Portland. And I think if every Oregonian saw that presentation, we wouldn't have any problem with everybody wearing seatbelts. And prior to that, my opportunity seeing that, I wasn't convinced. But if you see the presentation that these trauma nurses put together, it doesn't take much to convince folks that safety belt use is extremely important. And so I would just urge and recommend that any opportunities that this division has to forward that presentation to as many Oregonians as possible, and urge you taking advantage of that opportunity. I have one other question
here,
Mr. Chair. The T21 that you have coming into this agency, how were those appropriated? Meaning, why did the federal government say $4 million go to this program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, under T21, Oregon is one of the fortunate states where we're being rewarded for the good job that we've been doing in safety over the last 20 years. In T21, there's a base program that every state gets based on their population and the road miles that they have within their state boundaries. But there are some incentive programs that are made available this time in T21. And two of those, Oregon's receiving a large share of funds. One, because we have 0.08 as our blood alcohol content level in the state of Oregon for impaired driving. We received just over $2 million for the 1999 year for safety programs just because we have the 0.08 law. There were only 14 other states in the nation during the 1999 year that will receive those funds. Washington will become the 16th state next year due to the fact that they realistic to pass 0.08. The other incentive program that we received recently was because of our high safety belt use rate in the state. Under T21, federal government is to reallocate back to states funds based on the safety belt use rate and their population. In Oregon, this past year, we received $1.4 million because of our high safety belt use rate. That, in turn, went right towards safety belt use programs such as Prominent and Talk Trust and Think First program that you had mentioned, as well as some of the other ones that I mentioned earlier in the presentation.
In addition to the seatbelt and the blood alcohol level, what other incentives exist for Oregon having a lower death rate, as an example, on the highways? What is the reward for having lower percentages?
Mr. Chairman, some of the other incentive programs that are available under the T21. One is an impaired driving incentive fund based on a host of measures. There's about 15 different items that we would have to qualify under, which deals with the level of VAC, the level of fatality rate where alcohol is involved, administrative sanctions that are placed on drivers that are caught under the influence. And that program would result in about $700,000 coming to the state. That particular application is quite lengthy because there are so many measures we have to put together and show. Another incentive program is in the traffic records or the data area, that if we can show that we have a plan in place and a project identified that we want to move forward as far as dealing with data in the transportation and the safety area, we would be able to bring in about $150,000 a year specifically to help with data needs. And this particular year, we've been working with DMV and state police in identifying some areas in those two agencies where that $125,000 might be able to be applied.
Are these dedicated federal funds from IC to spend on the safety program, or are these federal funds that conceivably could be spent some other area of state government and still address the objective of lowering the death rate and injury rate?
Mr. Chairman, the funds are for transition safety purposes, and they flow to Transition Safety Division as a block. We, in turn, when addressing the outcomes, the performance measures, and the subject areas that we want to address and that the Safety Committee has identified as goals for the next year, we will in turn grant those funds to other agencies involved that help us achieve those goals in safety. So the other state agencies, other local agencies do end up as a final recipient of the funds. It is worthy of noting that for the federal funds we receive, 40% of those funds must go to local agencies. That is a minimum standard. Very often, Oregon is near the 50% mark in directing the grants and the contracts to local agencies throughout the state.
So, say you were at the 40% level, where did the other 60% go?
Mr. Chairman, I did bring with me a list of all of the projects for 1991.
No, did they go to projects, or where does the 60% go? You indicated 40% flows through. Now, where does this other 60% go?
Mr. Chairman, some of the projects that that we fund that would be considered not recipient of local agencies, for instance, a grant to the Oregon State University, where we fund part of an individual there that does engineering training for local municipalities. We fund an individual with the Oregon Youth Court Association in order to help youth courts that are established around the state understand the importance of traffic laws, particularly the teens and the safety belt use rate. Some of the funds that we receive goes towards the motorcycle safety program that is mandated that we operate throughout the state. Some funds go to the Oregon State Police. We have approximately about $900,000 a year from our office that goes to the Oregon State Police to do projects such as work zone patrol, speed patrol, impaired driving, and occupant protection and safety belt use patrol. We have projects where we provide funds to the district's attorney association where it's for death book for judges and district attorneys to use for all of the changes in the impaired driving laws that occur or if new cases are passed. There's a list of others, Mr. Chairman, but the recipient outside the 40% is somebody that's classified other than a city or a county, and it can be state agency or it can be a nonprofit agency.
Are they required to match any of the monies, or is it just grant that comes to them?
Mr. Chairman, that is one of the nice things about the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration funds is that for the grants awarded out, there is no hard cash match. Very often, the match is in some in-kind services. For instance, our grant may pay for the individual salary, but the recipient of the grant would picks up the office space or the printing or the telephone. Or, for instance, when we grant funds for law enforcement time, the law enforcement agency picks up the car or the gas and indicate that as their soft match, but there is no hard cash match requirement for the NHTSA funds.
I want to go on to, as an example, the OSU position on research. If we weren't paying that person, what would that person be doing?
Sure, I can answer that question.
Okay. What information is available to the National Traffic Safety Board that could be gleaned out of information they have that needs to be replicated by OSU?
Mr. Chairman, that particular project at OSU is very specific to identify needs from the public works departments around the state. Through their civil engineering program and through the students and agencies involved there, they will design 6 classes per year addressing a very specific item, such as guardrails and when a local municipality does an overlay or a chip seal or something like that. How do they deal with guardrails and when do they have to replace them based on the height measurement and distance from the road?
Okay, thanks.
I have a couple of questions if I could. One is the child's seat safety information about the kinds of seats that are the better seats and everything. Now, you said that lower income individuals who those who don't have the money, like at Fred Meyer's, you let them know that they can get it at cost or whatever. But I'm wondering what kind of an information program you have around the state to let people know. Maybe some people that are first time pregnant and going to have a baby and they're looking into what car seat they should buy that is the acceptable one. How do they get that information? I mean, what outlets? I mean, do you go, if they call DMV, would DMV know? Fred Meyer's, or, I mean, where can they go?
Madam Chair, if you
could
gamble. There's a 1-800 number that is published for the Child Safety Seat Resource Center, and it is being published in as many phone directories as we're able to identify and place that there. We have connections with the maternity wards throughout the state as much as possible. We have brochures that are made available to them, plus information on the Safety Seat Resource Center. Most law enforcement and fire department and volunteer ambulance service providers around the state know of our program or know of how to connect, because as there are sometimes the place where people will call first. And so we try and publish as many places as we can find, and if there are new outlets, we're more than willing to try and see if that will make a difference in getting the information out.
Yes.
Something totally different. Down the bicycles on your page 5, you're getting some goals for 99-2001, and you've got reduce the number of fatal and injury crashes involving bicycles to 670 by December 31 of 2000. Do we know how many? Couple questions here. First of all, do we know how many commuter bicycle riders there are in the state? Do we know how many of these accidents or injury crashes happen with commuters versus children? That's basically kind of like where I'm getting. I'd like to get an idea how many people actually commute back and forth to work on bikes, and if they are the crash victims or injury victims, or if it's children. And you might not have that information right now, but I would like it.
Sure. Chief, I can answer part of your question. I don't know the first in regards to the commuters, but the second, in our annual performance plan, persons under age 19 account for just over half of all bicycle-related injuries. Specifically, ages 11 to 15 is 20%.
So, excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Please. Persons under 19 account for over 50%, did you say? Over 50%. Just over, I take it. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so, Senator Lynn.
Concerning the alcohol content level we have, it's 0.8. And is there any other state, do they have any 0.6 or 0.4?
Sure, Senator Lynn. In Oregon, we do have a lower blood alcohol content for those that are driving with a commercial driver license. There are no other states at this time that have a general blood alcohol content level below 0.08. My understanding is in the state of Utah, they were one vote shy of being able to go to a 0.06 within their state. A lot of states are showing interest in going to 0.08. As I mentioned earlier, the state of Washington just at January 1st went to 0.08. There are some states that have a lower blood alcohol level for a second or subsequent offense at 0.05 or at 0.04. So once you have been convicted of DUI, the second one is at a much lower level.
One more follow-up question.
Yes,
please. And do you know which is the state the highest BAC level? any other state?
Sure, Senator Lim.
Does this sort of correlate between how it's going to affect, you know, driving and fatality?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lim, there are 16 states at 0.08, and the remaining states are at 0.10.
0.10, so 2% higher, 0.2%.
That's correct.
Do they show more higher that the fatality rate with the 2% higher than compared to all the 16 states, 0.8?
Senator Lim, I'd be happy to send you a state-by-state list of that. I don't have that with me, but there is a publication that identifies the alcohol-involved fatality count on a state-by-state basis.
Thank you.
Yeah,
in that area, you said that some commercial licenses or drivers have a lower rate. Is that true in this state? And if so, what is that rate?
Sure, Senator Chief, that is true nationwide.
Nationwide, okay.
And I believe it is 0.04.
Okay.
It may be 0.05, I apologize.
Thank you.
So, Chairman, okay. As indicated on page 5 of the presentation, those are the performance goals that have been established for our upcoming year for transportation safety programs around the state. And Mr. Tryant presented earlier regards to linking the policy level, where do you want to go, to start talking about very specifically how are you use those measures in an outcome on a day-to-day basis and what projects you do or do not do. This list is what drives the projects we will do next year. The funds that we pass through to transportation safety go by problem identification process. For instance, when we would look at an area in impaired driving, we will look on a county-by-county or city-by-city level in regards to citations, convictions, fatal crashes, injury crashes in impaired driving to decide which cities or counties that we will in turn fund with our impaired driving funds for the year 2000. These goals are established by working with the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee, as well as the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUII and the Governor's Advisory Committee on Motorcycle Safety. Those governor-appointed citizen volunteers help us establish where we're going to move for the next year in regards to our benchmark.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to belabor this, but I don't see on this list, maybe it's the number one, but we hear a fair amount about crashes on Highway 18 or the highway to the coast there near what's that casino? Spirit Mountain. What is that in this criteria? Would it be? Wouldn't really be the first one, I guess. And how would you identify that? It seems to me that if a particular highway has a lot of crashes that may not even be involved with alcohol or other things, that it also should be on the list.
Sorry, Chief. One of the programs that we have in the safety division is the corridor safety program. From our budget, very often we will be involved in funding law enforcement in the area, training for the local volunteers that are there for the fire or ambulance service. In some cases, for instance, in that particular corridor, we did help fund Jaws of Life at the Willamina Fire District because their Jaws of Life quit on them and they were in desperate need to try and replace that equipment, so we helped with a little bit of that funding. We also try and act as a catalyst with the other agencies involved, the counties, cities, and then the district office from the Highway Division, the Highway Program of ODOT, in order to help identify what fixes would need to be there. Our funds can do the enforcement and the education side. The operations side is where the engineering funds would come from. There are 13 safety corridors around the state. Most of the time, we are able to, just by public involvement, public outreach, some law enforcement time, and very often some minor engineering, such as larger signs, or striping, or sometimes some rumble strips in regards to where there's a stop sign coming, can have a huge impact. Almost all of the corridors dropped from their high crash rate or fatal rate down to or below the state rate within about 18 months. And so we have an impact.
Representative Beck.
Thanks, Chair. I'm just wondering if you have a way of characterizing the safety problems, whether they are or accidents, whether they're rut-related, bad road-related versus inclement weather. And do you break all that down so we can get a sense of how many of these accidents are related to inadequate road, inadequate passing facilities related to the volume, ruts in the gorge. And whenever I drive down the gorge at night, I feel in the rain, I feel I'm taking my life and putting my life in jeopardy. But other roads are not rutted and just, bad things happen. Do you have any way in your matrices to tell us all that or tell yourself all that?
Sure, Representative Beck. First, I'd say 80% of all traffic crashes are related to some sort of driver error. And so as far as approaching reducing the number of deaths and injuries in the state, that's the lion's share, and that's where we need to go. As far as tracking road condition and environmental condition where traffic crashes are occurring, we have a statewide accident database that collects just around 50,000 traffic crashes per year. And in that database, there is information in regards to where it occurs, as well as environmental, if it's rain or snow or dry and daytime. For those crashes that occur on state highways, the information that's collected in that database is in turn sent to the region and district offices in mass form. You may have seen that, I believe, a little earlier in ODOT's presentation, highlighting the corridors where, at a district level, they need to go out during the upcoming year and identify, is it dealing with guardrail that needs to be placed that's not there, or if there's rutting in the area.
Please give that feedback. Okay, great.
Okay. Can I inquire how much more is going to be involved in presentations? I'd like to do one more quick one this morning, if we could. Can you kind of summarize it, Troy, please?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. On page 6, the budget for transportation safety is outlined in that presentation, particularly in regard to the federal funds line. You'll notice the large increase in the number of federal funds coming into transportation safety, and that is due to the incentive programs in IST and the good work that has been done in the state over the last 20 years. We do have one.
Excuse me, Chris. Of the P21 money that you're getting, can any of that be used for anything besides transportation safety? I mean, is it flexible enough to be used for other things?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duke, the funds that are coming in are transportation related. There are two accounts that can be used for transportation safety purposes across the board. There are a majority of them have some sort of dedicated marking to them. For instance, they must go to impaired driving or towards child safety seat programs or towards safety belt programs.
There are other times that are more flexible. What concerns me, Mr. Chair, is there's a bill floating around, a substantive bill, that would earmark all flexible funds or discretionary funds, I forget exactly what the term is, within ODOT to preservation and modernization. And it scares me that programs like this might lose. They don't have very much to start out with, and it's amazing what he does with what little we give him. And I get nervous about bills like that and the repercussions they might have to little programs like this that are actually out there keeping people safer.
Chairman, one last
item.
Safety Division has an option package requesting $4 million in expenditure limitations for field grant program, and that is directly related to the increased funds that are coming in from ICE. In summary, Mr. Chairman, Transportation Safety Division works with many partners to conduct the work that we are assigned. Very often, the safety programs act as a catalyst for local communities and statewide programs. An impact has been made, as noted earlier, and in cases, our work has been recognized at the national level, and that's why we're one of the few states receiving a lot of the incentive funds. Transportation Safety is looking forward to making even more impact during the 1999-2001 biennium. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Keith Wright, Representative Schrader.
Just real quick one regarding, while you evaluate the traffic safety at various locations, you mentioned stop signs, and what portion of the department actually allocates the dollars for the traffic safety improvements, like stop signs, stop lights, whatever reconstruction needs to be done?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schrader, in some cases, those projects can be funded through the Transportation Safety Division. In most cases, the funds that are going towards those types of things are by the local public works agencies. If it's a city street or a county road, if it's on a state highway, then it's typically funded through the district office in that area.
Okay, further questions? Chairman Lem?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me we have more of people riding bike at this time, city and for commuting, whatever. That's a lot of problems associated with it, more prone to have more accidents. Do you have any plans sometime in the evening? They just drive around the city without having a proper the lighting or reflection. Sometimes it's very difficult to see them. And what programs do you have to increase the safety of that issue? Bicycle most
sure. Sure, Senator Lynn, there are two programs in the bicycle area. One is for the elementary school age bicyclists, that we have a curriculum that the PE or health teacher can use that addresses bicycle safety, and we have a list of volunteers that will come in and help conduct bicycle rodeos within that area if they so choose. The other is in the Portland metropolitan area. We funded a project with multiple agencies there, City of Portland and others, with a public education component as well as an enforcement component. On the law enforcement side, it is mainly aimed at educating the driver, the bicyclist, and in this case, the pedestrian as well, more at getting people to recognize their unsafe behavior, not to generate, not for citation generation, but to get people to reawake towards the mix of traffic in that area and the need for, in case of the bicyclists and pedestrians, the need to be seen at dawn, dusk, and at dark.
Yes, please. Are they required to have some kind of a reflectors in the bicycle in the evening, or what's the current setup? Some of them, they don't have at all.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lim, I'd be glad to give you a list of what's required for a bicycle during the evening hours.
Okay. Further questions? No, thank you, Troy. We're going to try to deal with aeronautics here. We probably have about 8 minutes to go with aeronautics bicycle and polling, please.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
The DAS report was previously handed out within your notebook on transportation safety. Yes.
Linda, do you have any comments you want to make?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just two. One is that internally in current service level budget, there have been transfers of work zone development, getting break, and fuel safety supply programs from the Highway Division to transportation safety. Second, the governor's revised budget is revised by about $400,000 federal funds limitation, which will make permanent the five positions which were granted to the agency at the November 1998 emergency.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ann Crooks. I'm the interim manager of the Aeronautics Division of ODOT. And I made my presentation on Thursday, and I'm just here to answer your questions this morning.
Are there any questions left over by the committee members? Is this budget predicated on the passage of Senate Bill 108 or no?
No. Mr. Chair, this has nothing to do with that.
So 108 passes. What does it do to your budget? You just switch from ODOT to aviation?
Yes, Mr. Chair, my understanding is that Senate Bill 108 would have all of our programs and all of our budgets continue just as they are now under a different structure.
And who would you be held accountable to?
Mr. Chair, we would be held accountable to a proposed Oregon Aviation Commission and to the governor and to the legislature.
Okay. Grace?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Grace Hunnigan, Director. I'd like to put a plea in that if you do pass on a Bill 108 that you, and it's not part of ODOT anymore, that you not run it through our budget in any fashion. I think it's currently constructed. It would, we'd be collecting the money for it, and it would be, because we're in the business of collecting money, it would run for our budget, so whether you could do something, we have a lot of things running through our budget right now, making our budget look larger than what the actual ODOT budget is, and so if you're going to disconnect them, please disconnect them altogether.
Is that the airplane fuel tax the collection?
Correct, Mr. Sherman. AFGAS. We collect the.
So it's collected, and then you pass it over to aviation.
Correct. This is what we do today. If they're a part of our budget today, if they're going to make them not a part of our budget, I just wanted to be sure you disconnected the money as well.
Thank you.
I'll put the request in, I guess.
Okay. Representative Schrader.
Well, if that was to occur, then wouldn't there be some increased costs? Because someone would have to then take up the administration of the and collection of the tax and its distribution, I assume. So it would be less money that ODOT would require, more money that the aviation department would require. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I assume that aeronautics could collect that at that point if they are their own department.
Mr. Chair and Representative Schrader, I might clarify that of the fuel taxes that are collected right now, we receive a transfer that is less the cost of collecting those taxes. So we're paying for the collection now. Presumably we would pay for that in some other form.
But you would not be paying for it under Ms. Carnican's approval. You would collect the taxes, correct? I understood that.
Mr. Chairman, it's a request on my part. You cut them out of my budget, cut them out altogether. Don't, just a request.
Okay.
When did this change come about? We've been talking about the possibility of separating aeronautics for 4 years, and ODOT has consistently said it would be fine with them to continue collecting the taxes. No big deal. We do it now. We just pass through the money like we do the others. They would pay for it, or actually, I think you take the percentage off as it's passing through. This is the first I've heard that you would like them to go away entirely if they go away at all. So when did this happen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, I don't believe I've ever testified to the fact that we collect the money or not. As we went through the budget process and as we've heard testimony or various speeches on the floor, it's been very difficult for me to, this session, to explain my budget and the volumes of dollars that pass through, so it's something I've become aware of, but I don't believe it's ever been discussed. I don't believe we've ever testified, or I've ever testified. Or
I certainly had conversations with ODOT, and it may have been during the interview that they testified, but I mean, it makes to me a great deal of sense to let the folks who have been collecting it to continue to collect it. I know you collect for a number of other good things out there. And for those people who are very concerned that it not be, that it remains some ties with ODOT, this was one piece that made sense. I just really, that's a complete change of course from what the agency has told us for the last 4 years. So I'm surprised.
Pardon, Mr. Chairman, I don't believe the issue's come up in the past that I've been aware of, and I apologize if this is a surprise. I'm more trying to manage the buffer of issues that are ascribed to my portfolio. And if I didn't, this isn't a hearing on Senator Kennedy, but I just...
Okay. Senator Cusack.
I guess I wanted to clarify why in this budget Senate Bill 108 wasn't mentioned, since most of the time when we have pending legislation, those things are brought up. It was completely ignored, and it kind of surprised me that it was.
Chair Hammond and Senator Cusack, that wasn't an ODOT proposal, Senate Bill 108, and as I stated earlier, my understanding of that bill is that all of our programs and budget and all of our operations would be just transferred from current ODOT to the Department of Aviation.
So it wouldn't make a difference. Okay.
That's my understanding.
Okay. And maybe it's just my lack of understanding that when anybody puts a possible piece of legislation that will pass, that they were the one coming forward with it. I don't know if that's consistently the way it is. I've with DAF, but I'll have to. I mean, if that is, that's fine. But it did surprise me. It wasn't listed.
Chair Hammond, Senator Cusack, actually, if it's in our proposal, we address it in our budget presentation. And if it's a piece of legislation that's submitted separately, we generally don't address it in our presentation.
Okay. So the questions. No, thank you both very much. Tomorrow morning we're going to have public testimony and hopefully she sees ODOT. And, as far as public testimony, we have some more to go on the budget. Then Wednesday and Thursday will be work sessions. And if the Senate starts going in at 10 o'clock, I would urge us to be here in a timely manner, because especially when we get into work sessions, we're going to all need to be here to participate. So with that, we're adjourned until 8:30 tomorrow.